Welcome to the Cycling Podcast at the 2025 Lloyds Tour of Britain, proudly sponsored by Lloyds. The race has reached its conclusion in Cardiff, where Geraint Thomas has signed off in his home city after a 19-year career in the professional ranks. Lloyds is a sponsor of British cycling, and the job of inspiring and developing the next generation of great British riders is already underway. Lloyds' partnership with British Cycling started last year, and the multi-year sponsorship will continue to support the nation's elite riders in the current Olympic cycle heading towards the LA Games in 2028. But Lloyds' involvement and interest in cycling doesn't begin and end at the elite level of the sport. Lloyds wants to encourage everyone to get on their bikes and explore the world on two wheels, utilising the bicycle as a mode of transport, a way to enjoy the countryside and establish connections with other cyclists. We'd like to say a very big thank you to Lloyds for supporting the Cycling Podcast this month, as we've been covering the Vuelta a España and, for the first time, the Lloyds Tour of Britain with daily episodes. Now let's go back to Sunday morning in Newport, where the final stage of the 2025 Lloyds Tour of Britain started from the Geraint Thomas National Velodrome of Wales.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. It's, we watched a little montage on the bus now, and I can feel myself already starting to choke up a bit. And yeah, Max and Sar, my wife, met us on the way in, so they were there. And yeah, it was nice, but it's just so surreal. I think, like most stages this week, I've kind of forgot that I have to do a bike race, because, you know, it's just almost like a celebration before the start, and then you get going, and you're like, oh, geez, I've actually got a bit of racing to do now. So yeah, it's kind of... It's definitely going to be emotional, I think, coming into Cardiff.
From Newport to Cardiff, 112.2 kilometres of racing, taking the riders from here at the Geraint Thomas National Velodrome of Wales to the finish in Cardiff this afternoon. A very special moment now as we celebrate, of course, the rider of which this velodrome is named after. He's going to make his way through the Guard of Honour, which is the traditional way in which bike riders and the peloton say goodbye to riders of the stature of Geraint Thomas. During his career, of course, he's brought all of us as fans so much pleasure in watching him as he has developed his career over 19 years, taking him, of course, from here in Cardiff across the world and racing the best bike races that it's possible to participate in. He started, of course, here with the Mendy Flyers 29 years ago at the age of 10, and this morning we celebrate Geraint Thomas at the end of his illustrious career. Sunshine. Switzerland, the Criterium d'Auvergne, the Tour of Romandy, the Tour of the Alps, double podium finisher in the Giro d'Italia, twice Olympic champion, Commonwealth Games champion, and much, much more. We welcome Geraint Thomas onto the start line on this Lloyds Tour of Britain.
Thank you. Well, Lionel, the last dance before the last stage of the Tour of Britain, stage six, under the floodlights in Newport Stadium on the running track next to the Newport Velodrome, where we've just seen the beginning of a sort of long final farewell for one of track and road cycling's favourite British sons.
Absolutely, yes, it's the Geraint Thomas farewell stage of the Lloyds Tour of Britain, isn't it? It's the Geraint Thomas National Velodrome of Wales, Graham. It's been named after Geraint Thomas. And he made the point in his closing press conference there. There was a little gathering in one of the meeting rooms underneath the track. It was quite claustrophobic in there, wasn't it? And Geraint looked quite sort of subdued, as if he trying to make sure that the emotions didn't bubble to the surface. Mm. He looked like that all morning here, really. But he did make the point that they had the Great Britain cycling team holding camp here before the 2004 Olympics. And, you know, that's over two decades ago. You know, the longevity of his career and his achievements on both the road and the track really came home this morning. As you walk up to the track centre in the velodrome, there's a display of his jerseys from his career. There's his Commonwealth Games Wales jersey. There's a Great Britain jersey. There's a Tour de France yellow jersey. And the start of the final stage of this Lloyds Tour of Britain with the team presentation in the track centre there. Fantastic. The atmosphere in there, it was really electric. I mean, there's not a lot of seating in there. It's not the biggest velodrome in the world, but it was a real sense of occasion. And it brought to mind the team presentation before Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, which they have in the Ghent track centre. A really great idea to have the start here. And I may be so bold to venture, Geraint Thomas, not the most comfortable when the spotlight is so intensely on him. I think he was probably quite relieved to just get out on the road and stretch the legs a bit.
Yeah, lovely moment in there as well. I mean, they've done a great job putting on a kind of that feeling of a real sense of occasion this morning, of this being a real kind of moment, not just for Geraint Thomas's career, but for, you know, the story of British cycling over the last 20 years. You mentioned the holding camp here in 2004. Geraint's first Tour of Britain was 2005, so there's a kind of a nice symmetry to that too, 20 years on. Another nice moment, I think I missed this because I darted down to the team buses in the car park next to the Geraint Thomas Velodrome. He did a lap of the track, didn't he?
He certainly did. Well, all the teams did a lap of the track on the way into the team presentation before they were announced to the crowd, and then on their way back out again. The Ineos Grenadiers took their time and waited for Geraint's young son, who was on his little bike, to lead the team round with Geraint, and the rest of the Ineos Grenadiers teammates kind of hung back a bit. I mean, I'm a hardened old hat, Graham, but I was welling up a little bit at that, because...
Not always, are you? Not always.
No, I've got a soft centre. And that was a lovely moment. And then the stars of the Lloyds Tour of Britain peloton did the traditional guard of honour, you know, holding the bikes up so Geraint could go through the spinning wheels to the start line. And I saw Rod Ellingworth, who is the race director here on the Lloyds Tour of Britain, but of course goes back two decades plus, because he was the British Cycling Academy director when Geraint Thomas was just making his first steps in cycling. And yeah, I got the sense that he was holding back the tears a little bit. A real sense of occasion, a real sense of Wales saying thank you to Geraint Thomas, and Geraint Thomas saying thank you to Wales as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing that you might have missed while you were stepping out of the velodrome as the race got started was a man dressed as Deadpool playing Welsh choir sort of anthems. Curious little moment as the peloton made their way past out onto the road. But that's where we should head to.
We should. And we should also say the morning didn't start too promisingly, did it? Because it was hammering down with rain as we were making our way here to Newport. Fortunately, apart from a few spots of rain just as they came to the start line, fortunately it's dried up a bit. So maybe they'll get lucky. And although the roads are wet, maybe they won't experience any more rain, but it's going to be cheers all the way to Cardiff anyway.
It's his sort of weather. You mentioned that Commonwealth Games jersey for the 2014 win. I mean, he won that in absolutely hooning rain, didn't he?
Let's get ourselves to Cardiff before they do. It's going to be tight.
Well, Lionel, that was us at the Geraint Thomas Velodrome in Newport this morning. This evening, we have made our way just down from the finish in Cardiff. We're at the Pen and Wig pub, aren't we? And it's congratulations to Romain Grégoire today, stage six of the Lloyds Tour of Britain, as well as Olav Coy, and of course, once again, to Geraint Thomas. We will come to that. The race sort of shaped up as we thought it might today?
Well, I disagree, actually. My reading of what might happen today turned out to be completely false, because I thought that everything would be back together in time for the intermediate sprint before Caerphilly Mountain because of those crucial time bonus seconds that might have kept the overall classification fully in play. But in fact, the break that had been out there all day, Well, the three of the four riders who've been in the break survived over the top and almost survived right to the line. Poor old Fred Wright, who was in that break, pipped, really, by Olav Coy of Visma Lisa Bike and Sam Watson, the British champion for Ineos Grenadiers. But it was a heroic effort from that break. And stages like that, that run-in, it's almost like the topography of this part of South Wales and the run-in to Cardiff was specifically designed for a bike race, because the distance between the top of the mountain and the finish line and the time gap that they had at the bottom of the climb was just enough to keep them away at the top of the climb, and the time gap at the top of the climb was only a handful of seconds away from being enough to keep them away at the line.
When the race made its way out into the hills, sort of deep into farmland, there was another little extra factor that gave the break a little helping hand. Obviously, it wasn't decisive, but it was an amusing sight to see, wasn't it?
Amusing, yes. The peloton had to stop to let a farmer drive his cattle across the road. I mean, we've seen this kind of thing when the Tour of Britain has been in Exmoor. Sometimes the wild cattle up there get in the road. I remember when I was there in 2021, there was, a near miss when riders had to swerve round an immovable bovine animal who wasn't paying any attention to the Tour of Britain. But no, the peloton, well, they gave the cattle a guard of honour the same way that the peloton gave Geraint Thomas a guard of honour at the start this morning.
We also see the sheep on the road this week as well, so other Welsh cliches are available. We should mention the riders in the break, shouldn't we? Mats Wenzel of the Kern Pharma team, Julius Johansson of UAE Team Emirates, Bastien Tronchon for Decathlon, Aja Desert Le Mondial, and Fred Wright for Bahrain Victorious, who of course we've already mentioned. They fought out the first KOM sprint, and as you say, it was Johansson, Tronchon and Wright who hung on for that group in the end. But a little bit of a different break in that they were that much more powerful today.
Yeah, there was some talent in that break, and it was clearly a break that was committed and felt that they had a chance to go to the end. And with just over a minute still in hand as they hit the bottom of Caerphilly Mountain, which is a steep climb. It's not terribly long, but it is a steep climb. And they were pulling all sorts of faces as they were getting towards the top. Right at the very bottom ramps, they lost a big chunk of it. You know, so again, we're going off the time graphics on the screen, but it was coming down rapidly, and the group behind of GC riders with Remco Evenepoel in there, Romain Grégoire in the green leader's jersey, of course, they had them in sights. I mean, it was almost back together, and then suddenly the elastic snapped again and the trio got away, and the kind of will went out of the chase a little bit until they got down into the outskirts of the city.
Yeah, and we saw a couple of them sort of off the break and then back on as well, working very hard to get back on, Johansson and Wenzel. I asked Klaus Lodewijk, the Soudal Quickstep DS, why or how the way the race shaped up, why there wasn't necessarily an opportunity for Remco Evenepoel to take the time that he needed, because of course he started just the 2 seconds off Romain Grégoire at the beginning of the day. Here he is now. Klaus Lodewijk, Soudal Quickstep. Tell me, what didn't quite go right for you today? Was there no opportunity? Was there just an opportunity for Remco to take that 2 seconds that he needed, or that 3 seconds that he needed for the win?
Well, as I say, we didn't focus at all at the bonification. We really wanted to try and grab another stage if that would be possible. But for sure, the race itself wasn't selective enough. I mean, climb was there, was hard, but yeah, you just arrived pretty fresh still at that time, and was clear that we couldn't make any big gaps, and then we just try to still go with that group. Then we still had the chance of winning maybe the stage, but at the end everything came back and it was impossible to do something.
Did you go in today focusing on like Caerphilly Mountain, for example, thinking that that's where things could break up and there might be an opportunity for Remco to put some time in and find a gap?
Yeah, exactly. That was the plan of today. Because only this morning we had to start with three riders, so we didn't have much option to pull or to do anything else. So we fully focused on the climb. For a moment it looked good because it was quite a nice group that suddenly was up the road, and if they would go to the finish line, then you can really gamble and try to win, and then for sure you take the classification as well. But it was meant to be, and that's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, let's face it, Remco Evenepoel, was he going to be able to take time bonus seconds at the bottom of the climb and then try and break away on the climb? Was that asking too much, even for a rider of his calibre? You know, so many little factors that he would have to weigh up, because he could have done enough to kind of take the virtual lead on the road, but then lose out in the final sprint. Mm. And as it turned out, it was much more of a sprinter's sprint finish than it was a sort of Romain Grégoire, Remco Evenepoel sprint finish. So the only real option in play would have been for Evenepoel and maybe Onley and so on to really break the elastic there and get away. And I think the fact that the break was still away complicated that a little bit, because it gave everybody the incentive to close gaps and make sure that nothing got clear. So really, it probably was expecting a bit much to think that it would go all the way to the line, but I was living in hope.
And as Ludovic said there, they started today with only, and I didn't realise this, they only started with three riders, so they were starting with a weaker hand, but still were all in for the stage win in the hope that there might be a break for Remco to sort of, well, a late break for Remco to get involved with, or an opportunity for him off of Caerphilly Mountain. But it sort of speaks to the strength of the riders who are here.
Yeah, and also the fact that there was a lot of interest in bringing it all back together on the run-in. And I mean, they did it in the nick of time, didn't they? I mean, Fred Wright was a matter of meters away from what would have been his second win as a professional. His only previous victory is the national championship road race that he won. He's a rider who gets very close quite a lot of times in these sorts of breaks. But Olav Kooi, give him a sniff of the finish line, and well, he hunted them down and got himself his third stage win out of six. I mean, a 50% win rate in the space of a week. Very impressive for Kooi.
And a higher than 50% win rate for him overall at the Tour of Britain. So he's rumoured to be off to Decathlon Agir d'Azur Le Mondial next season. Another mention for Bastien Tronchon, actually, one of the riders in the break. So he won Trobro Leon earlier this year, beating Anthony Turgis and Kevin Vauquelin to the line, among others. So no doubt about how strong he could be, and the fact that he might well have been, I mean, he was in that final group, so he made it all the way to the line, sort of didn't quite contest the finish, but was right up there nonetheless. If that rumoured or almost certain Olav Kooi move to Decathlon happens this summer, that will open the way for Matthew Brennan, his teammate, who we saw lead him out for the win today. I caught up with Matthew Brennan at the buses earlier while you were still in the Velodrome. It was, as I said to him, it's quite a nice sort of changing the guard almost. One famous British rider retiring, another young British rider with his own sort of breakout season. Matthew Brennan, Visma Lisa Bike. Big week for you, successful week for the team, going away with a points jersey for Olav Kooi. Stage win for you. Have you got what you came for, though?
Yeah. I mean, we've got a stage win, and we've also got two stage wins with Olav, so we came in with the plan of that, and that's what we've come out with. And yeah, we also said we'll see what happens with GC, and we gave it a good go yesterday. Weren't quite there, just dangling off the back of the front group, but I think I can be really satisfied with my performance, and especially with yesterday with Glogi coming through with the second place. We've been active every single day, and that's been really important.
Yeah, there's a pleasing sort of symmetry to this being your real breakout season, and Geraint Thomas obviously retiring today.
So he's inside doing his press conference in the Newport Velodrome. We're outside of the team buses. Talk to me about this season. What's your proudest moment, biggest win in terms of how you've seen it?
I think Tour Volta Catalunya was quite a nice one. First World Tour win, but also just kind of the way it all happened was really quite cool, really quite nice. And I think it was a pretty special way to get my first World Tour victory.
In terms of how it all happened, sort of quite a last minute sort of call up, and no real pressure being on your shoulders?
Yeah, nothing. It was just see what happens, see how the week goes. No kind of stress. The ambitions were kind of set anyway for stages, and then just seeing where Simon would finish on GC. So I think we played it quite nicely that week.
And what about your own ambitions going into next season?
It'd be nice to give the classics another go. I think it was quite an interesting experience this year doing it for the first time, and it's quite overwhelming. So I think to be able to know what to expect and approach it a little bit differently will be nice to do.
Yeah. And in terms of Grand Tours, any thoughts on that?
Not at the moment. Not that I know of. So depends on the team.
Good luck today and thanks.
Thank you.
Very much changing of the guard, as you say, Graham. Matthew Brennan was about 3 weeks old when Geraint Thomas pinned on the numbers for his first Tour of Britain in 2005.
It's amazing.
It is, isn't it? I mean, they were both reaching for a bidon of a different kind. Matthew Brennan's would have been filled with milk, and Geraint Thomas would have been in the pro peloton, you know, dreaming of making his next step as one of those young riders in the Great Britain team. And, I mean, Brennan's really an exciting rider. I spoke to a friend of the podcast, Rob, who came up to me near the buses after the finish. And, well, he's a real cycling aficionado. Spends a lot of time hopping across the channel, going to all sorts of races. He's off to Banche in a few weeks' time. He goes to small races and large races. And he was saying that he was at an event in France last year where the Visma Lisa Bike development team were riding, and he got talking to their team manager, who tipped him off about Matt Brennan and said he's a real special rider, very excited about what he can do. And I've got the same sort of feeling about Brennan as I had in 2007 and 8 when Mark Cavendish was coming along. Brennan has won an impressive number of races, hasn't yet won a Grand Tour stage because he hadn't had a chance to ride a Grand Tour yet. So it's interesting to hear how he's expecting the next year or two of his career playing out. I suspect he might force their hands a little bit just with his performances on the bike and the fact that he's so versatile. He's the type of rider who can win anything from a small group sprint that's really hard, an uphill finish type sprint. He's not just an out-and-out flat finish sprinter, and that gives him so many more possibilities. And as we've talked about already this week, you know, he can handle the cobbles. His first elite professional win was the Grand Prix d'Annam, which is a really tough race, lots of cobbled sections, and so he is really sort of almost a combination of Mark Cavendish and Geraint Thomas, when in the early days of his career we thought he was going to go in the direction of being a kind of classics type rider. He won E3 in Belgium, of course, but his career kind of went the other way and he became very good at week-long stage races and obviously winning the Tour de France. And Brennan kind of sits in the middle of that Venn diagram. You could imagine him winning a Tour of Romandy or, you know, improving his climbing enough to be able to win those kind of week-long stage races, just simply because we've seen enough from him so far to know that he can climb very well, and he will develop those skills as well. And it's about balancing that those two different skill sets to ensure that he gives himself the best chance of winning as many races as possible.
I've been quite impressed with the way he's sort of carried himself this week as well, the way he's dealt with the media. You sort of get very much a sense from him that he's here for business.
Absolutely, here for business. Matt Brennan's been up there every day, with the exception of the second climb of the tumble where he lost a bit of ground. And he's made a real impression, which is not easy to do when one of his teammates has won three stages. Just on Fred Wright as well and his real near miss, he raced with real intent today as well. And he's leaving Bahrain victorious. We know this already. He's, I think, got a three-year contract at Q36.5. I can remember a few weeks ago on the podcast when we were talking about Ineos Grenadiers and what they need to do to kind of reinvigorate themselves. I thought they could do worse than signing Fred Wright. Not a prolific winner, you know, only one win as a professional. But there's something about him, that sort of grit and determination. And he always gives his, you know, everything that he's got. Came up short today, but I think a move to Q36.5 might well be a really smart one for him, because Bahrain Victorious has got a lot of its focus on GC riders, and I think at Q36.5 there might be more opportunities for him to kind of hone that racecraft and get himself into positions to finish off and get himself a win or two.
Fred Wright, of course, finished third today. Did not feature on in the top 10 for GC. Let's do a quick rundown of that and who ended up in what jersey. So, or which jersey? So, Romain Grégoire tops the GC, finishing 2 seconds ahead of Remco Evenepoel. Grégoire for FDJ, Groupama FDJ, sorry. Evenepoel for Soudal Quickstep. Julian Alaphilippe in third, 4 seconds behind for Tudor Pro Cycling. Oscar Onley in fourth, 8 seconds behind for Team Picnic Post NL. Aurelien Paripantra, 12 seconds behind in fifth. And Afonso Eulalio for Bahrain Victorious in sixth. That means for the points jersey, Alev Coy has only extended his lead. Finished way ahead of Sam Watson, 77-35. Sam Watson in second place for Ineos Grenadiers. Romain Grégoire third in the points classification. KOM, as we said yesterday, Victor Verculli, untouchable, finishes 10 points ahead of Romain Grégoire in the end, and also takes the young rider's jersey ahead of Mathis Rondel for Tudor Pro Cycling. There was another slightly more curious way that Rondel has featured in the news today, or the fallout from yesterday's stage. Do you remember what it is? We discussed it very briefly earlier. We checked in on it.
This was on the climb of the tumble, wasn't it? He was on Remco Evenepoel's wheel, and Remco Evenepoel was penalised for brake checking Rondel. Now, I've only seen the clip of the incident. It's not conclusive, that, really. It looks, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Remco Evenepoel's probably taken it on the chin, but the commissaires have obviously seen more than we're able to see from that clip.
Yeah, technically a brake check, but a pretty harmless. Maybe just a reminder that, you know, I'm not that happy with doing all the pulling, I think, is what Remco was saying there.
Maybe. I mean, just a flick of the elbow will suffice, Remco.
Yes, next time.
Graham, I'm sure you'd like to join me in saying a big thank you to Lloyds for sponsoring us this week, enabling us to be here at the Tour of Britain following the race. And it's been a really enjoyable few days, hasn't it?
It has. And, you know, they've kind of given the race a lovely identity too. We've seen the green casquettes everywhere at each finish each day. And, yeah, as you say, you know, we wouldn't be here without them.
Absolutely. The other thing that seemed to be ubiquitous today was the Geraint Thomas face masks. Everyone was wearing a Geraint Thomas face mask today. It was Geraint Thomas's day, and we got to the Newport Velodrome this morning. The rain was pouring down. It wasn't the weather for the glorious sign-off that we all hoped for, but it didn't dampen the spirits at all. We crammed ourselves into that little room in the felt like it was underneath the track at Newport Velodrome for the press conference, and he came in and answered a few questions, and as we said earlier, he looked like he was trying to keep a lid on emotions. He's a little bit subdued, I felt, as if the sort of the sense of occasion had really been weighing on him from the moment he got up this morning, realizing that he was doing all of the rituals of life as a professional rider for the last time, certainly as a competitive professional rider.
Impossible not to be institutionalised when you spent that long as part of the peloton, isn't it? And when it's been the major part of your life. He looked a little bit shell-shocked this morning, didn't he? And it was almost like, little bags under his eyes, maybe he hadn't slept quite as well as he might have done. I'm sure he'll sleep great tonight after the celebrations in Cardiff. But he was, you know, maybe a little bit philosophical, as you'd expect him to be, and he's never been the most comfortable in the spotlight, has he?
No, but I think not uncomfortable in the spotlight. I've always thought he's a very well-adjusted person. He knows exactly who he is. He's very comfortable in his own skin. He's very personable. Certainly when dealing with the media, he treats every question with, you know, some consideration. He answers the question. He thinks about what he's saying. And, well, we hear probably the more effervescent side of his character in his podcast, of course, with Luke Rowe. But the questions were fairly predictable today about how he felt bringing the curtain down on his professional career after 19 years. Of course, well over two decades living this kind of life of racing and training and looking after his diet and his weight and resting and recovery and all of that. I wanted to kind of throw forward a little bit and ask him what he was going to be doing when he wakes up tomorrow. He'll still be contracted to Ineos Grenadiers until December the 31st, so technically still a professional rider, but he's not going to pin a number on again.
Not going to be a late entry for Lombardy.
I don't think so. And I asked him what he would do in the off-season, the first off-season for over 20 years, where he doesn't have to think about restarting training. And he said he's looking forward to doing some other things, going skiing, was one thing he mentioned, not something that pro riders can do because of the risk of having a crash or a fall and breaking something. So, and
as a man who also learnt to ski, and it's because I asked him afterwards, can you ski? Is it something you learned? And he can't ski. He's never learned to ski.
Interesting.
And so as another man myself who never learned to ski until I was 35 when I learned to ski. I say learned to ski. I could just about stand up on
some
of the more basic slopes.
Graham,
it's a real kind of ego check. You have to leave your ego at the door because you are an absolute beginner again. So good luck with that, Geraint.
It'll be interesting, won't it? Because maybe we'll find out in a few months' time, you know, after a ski season or two, which are his favourite alpine ski resorts. I mean, he'll have visited so many of them in the summer for training camps and racing. You know, where will he go skiing? Will he go to Courchevel or Leger or Teen, or where will it be? Anyway, the other thing that he confirmed was that he's very close to finalising the wording of his job description in the management role that he's going to take on at Ineos Grenadiers. And I think that's going to be really interesting to see how he makes that transition. He's such a respected figure. He's been at that team as a rider since day one. He knows absolutely everything that has gone on through the whole journey of Team Sky and Ineos Grenadiers, all of the highs of winning the Tour de France multiple times, including his win, of course, and the lows that he's gone through and the difficult times on the road. And he's going to transition into that management role over this winter. And obviously people were very keen to ask him about what it meant to finish his career in Cardiff. One of our colleagues asked the importance of being able to retire on his own terms. And he acknowledged that that was a big thing as well, being able to decide when he wanted to end his career. And the fact that the finish of today's stage, only a couple of kilometres, he said, from his parents' house. I mean, really is roads that he will have ridden multiple times. The finish line came past the Maindy track, where he first discovered cycling as a 10-year-old, went and joined a kind of introductory session at the Maindy track for the Maindy Flyers. And, yeah, crossing the line and then going to Cardiff Castle, where 4,000 people are going to celebrate the end of his career. He did sign off by saying that he would probably have a few beers with his teammates tonight.
Yeah, there were a lot of little details, as you say, that were, it was a considerately done route, considerately designed. A couple of other little details, of course, he designed his jersey that he and the team were wearing, the Ineos team were wearing. There was also a couple of nice little details on his top tube, so a white bike. White Pinarello bike with a sort of glittery golden top tube that marked his time in the team pursuit for Team GB at the Olympics, his Paris-Nice win from 2016, his Criterium du Dauphiné win from 2018, and of course, the Tour de France.
Yeah, I mean, the highlights of Geraint Thomas's career we ran through when he finished in Paris at the end of his final Tour de France. It's been an amazing career. for him. You know, he is one of the superstars of not just this era of British cycling, but of all time. And yeah, he's inspired a generation of people. And he's going to carry on cycling. You know, the bike is a part of his life. He's not going to be one of these people who doesn't want to touch the bike again. He might have a longer than usual break from cycling this autumn and winter, but it's been a part of his life for 29 years since he first did a few laps of Mandy track there.
He'll be in good company, won't he, down in Monaco?
He will, yes. And he will undoubtedly, as a staff member on Ineos Grenadiers, he'll still be able to wear the team kit and ride a team bike. He'll go out training with youngsters, and he'll probably every now and again want to remind them that he's still got it.
Yeah, more of a phasing out than a stopping.
Exactly. On his jersey, though, I really like that. I mean, he clearly invested so much emotional energy in coming up with a design that honoured the corporate colours of the Ineos Grenadiers team, merged them with the Welsh colours and the Welsh flag. There's the graphical design of the hairpin bends of Alpe d'Huez, where of course he won in 2018 to kind of seal the Tour de France victory. There's nods to his Commonwealth Games and Olympic Games success, and I think cycling does this really well. This, you know, turning the team uniform into is something that tells a story. And you know, the UCI have these rules about how often the teams can have a special celebration jersey. I think they should loosen the reins on that and give a much more of a free rein to teams to be creative and tell a story through their kit.
Mandate it the other way.
Yeah, you've got to do half a dozen a season. Yeah. Yeah,
we should end, Lionel, with a word on Romain Grégoire, the Lloyd's Tour of Britain overall winner. Another impressive showing from him. He started to show it really this summer at the Tour de Suisse.
I think you've got to go back a little bit further than that, actually. I mean, he was fourth in the Volta ao Algarve at the start of the season. He won the Forn Ardèche Classic one-day race at the start of March, one of those small French races that, you know, it's easy to say, oh, it's only a small race, but on hard terrain, difficult to win. Then he had a very impressive week in Belgium and Holland, because he was seventh at the Amstel Gold Race and seventh at Flèche Wallonne on the Mur de Huy. So, you know, slowly building up some results that we have to take notice of. But it was the Tour de Suisse, the opening stage, as you said the other day, Graham, in that terrible weather where they got away in that big break, and he held the leader's jersey for a few days. And although he slipped away over the second half of the race, he caught the eye, and in the first week of the tour he was up there in the same conversation as Tadej Pogacar and Jonas Vingegaard, with a fourth in Boulogne and a fifth in Rouen, as we've mentioned. So steadily he's assembling quite a nice palmares, but to get an actual victory in a major stage race like the Lloyd's Tour of Britain will, you know, give him a big boost going into next season. And it continues quite a relationship the French have with the Tour of Britain, because I think he is the fourth Frenchman to win. Can you name the other three?
Well, Julien Alaphilippe, who is, of course, he came very, very close, pushed Grégoire all the way this time round. It was the climb to Burton Dasset Country Park. That was the decisive factor between the two.
Absolutely,
There was so little in it. Tell me, who are the other two?
Well, they were back-to-back winners in 2007 and 8. We mentioned Romain Fayou yesterday, who won by less than half a second in 2007. He was riding for the Agri-Tubel team that year. And then the following year, also riding for the Agri-Tubel team, was Geoffrey Lecatre, who edged out Steve Cummings by just 5 seconds. And it took Cummings a few more years to get his name on the roll of honour for the Tour of Britain.
2016, wasn't it?
Was indeed.
Steve-o. Just a couple of things to cover off then, Lionel, as the rain really starts to hoon it down. I had a quick chat with Matt Brammeer, who is, of course, leading the Team GB or the GB national squad at the Tour of Britain, the Lloyd's Tour of Britain this year. He was quite pleased with the progress the team had made. Young team, made some big steps forward, better each day. Josh Golliker Was, in fairness to Matt, someone who I singled out, and he said, of course, he's been super strong. He struggled a bit with his positioning on the climbs, is the only sort of note he might have given him. He punctured today, Josh Golliker, but he'd animated the break. He'd been a huge part of the break twice so far this week. Punctured today before the Caerphilly Mountain climb and didn't manage to get back on. And a note on Ben Wiggins too, who didn't start yesterday. Matt Brummer said he went straight home with food poisoning.
Oh, dear. Well, I think they had an impressive week, really. I mean, what an opportunity for those young riders to race shoulder to shoulder with people who are in the peloton here. And you mentioned there, Bramier, making the comment about Golliker's positioning on climbs. These are the things that, at this level, young riders' eyes can be opened. Riding under 23 races or 1.2 races in Europe is one thing, but coming here to ride with, you know, riders from Visma Lisa Bike, UAE Team Emirates, Ineos Grenadiers, Soudal Quickstep, riders who are operating at the very, very top of their game. The peloton moves differently. Everything is just another level on from what they will have experienced previously. And so it's one of those things where, you know, they might be a little bit kind of shell-shocked this evening after 6 days of it, but they'll absorb what they've learned and hopefully it will make them stronger next time.
Yeah, and he finished by saying that it isn't the GB representation here isn't necessarily all about the team who are riding and racing, but it's also about the juniors, the under 23s, the riders who are on the cusp of selection. They can see that pathway. I think it's something else we've also mentioned earlier this week.
Absolutely. I mean, that's so important because, I mean, when I first started following cycling and covering cycling as a journalist, the Great Britain team would go off to the Tour de l'Avenir and really would be almost completely out of their depth, not just in terms of the racing, but just every other aspect of what it takes to just survive in the peloton. And it would be a real make or break experience for them. There are riders from the 90s who, you know, went to the Tour de l'Avenir and didn't really recover from that experience. I think these days, you know, you've got to bear in mind the level now is so much higher as well. These young lads are going into a race with Remco Evenepoel, for goodness sake. You know, there's such a potential gap in class between them, and yet they've managed to keep their faces out of the water, so to speak. They've survived the week, and you know, that will make them stronger, especially as there's support, there's a pathway, there's you know, there's a clear kind of way forward to absorb what they've learned this week and take it on into the winter training camps and then come through into next year stronger.
And who knows, we could have seen this week the next Geraint Thomas. We should end with one last word for Mr. Thomas. So, as we've seen a couple of times this week, he led his group home, and the riders who were sort of in his bunch with him as they crossed the line into Cardiff today. It kind of gave him the space to sort of soak up the applause and kind of did the you know, the almost like the magician on stage kind of arm outstretched to encourage the crowd to give Geraint Thomas exactly what he deserved today.
I don't think the crowd needed any encouragement, did they? I mean, it was a hero's homecoming, and I suspect the atmosphere in Cardiff Castle, despite the weather here, will be a warm and a fitting send-off for Geraint Thomas at the end of a great career. I mean, here we are in this pub garden. I love the sort of stoic nature of a British Sunday in a pub garden. It's raining heavily, but people are not being deterred from their pints and their, I think there's a few Sunday roasts being enjoyed as well.
In several ways, it feels like the most appropriate place for you and I to round off our Tour of Britain too. We should get on the road.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure, Graham.
As ever, a pleasure, Lionel. Thank you.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.